not. I'm good for whatever.
I'm always down. I mean, I want to get into it. This is a discussion I'm excited to have. This is a band I love. So.
I like to talk, and I'm excited. It's a good thing.
Let's chat it up.
I'm super into it. Yeah, let's get chatting here on Desert Island Discourse. I'm Max Cohen.
I'm Andrew Cothran. on this podcast, every week, we examine musical artists' discographies and take a magnifying glass to their musical output and pick which album is the best album for our given subject. This week is our second week of a two-parter, where each of your intrepid co-hosts introduces a band to the other. Last week was P Model, which was Max's introduction for myself, who I never heard of and who I liked quite a bit. And this week, I am introducing a band to her, and our band this week is Pygmy Lush.
And as far as I know, there was no concerted effort for both bands to start with the same letter.
No, it just kind of happened that way.
It just happened.
I think when this idea came up, these were the first two suggestions that we had for each other. And I remember, like, Max suggested to me P Model, and I was like, yep, I've never heard of them. And I suggested P Model, or Pygmy Lush, to her, and she said, never heard of them, so...
Never heard of them. I think I had heard about them once because you might have referenced them on an earlier episode.
Possibly. They are one of my favorite bands.
But even then, I was like, I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. So that's what we did this week.
I do now. I do know now.
Now you know.
Here at the end of... if I haven't heard it, it's new to me, Fortnite.
Hell yeah.
It's been a lovely Fortnite. I mean, generally dark. You guys haven't been super happy bands.
No, they're not going to lift the spirits in any kind of way.
No, they're not. They're no lifter puller that way.
Yes, the band that made me happiest.
Yes. we spent the week with I spent the week with three albums in a split EP I never heard of or knew anything about, and even though I keep making jokes about how sad they are, I'm also very sad, and so it ended up being a really good pairing. I had a good time with this.
A Pygmy Lush and P Model ended up kind of being a good 1-2 punch because they're both very strange bands in their way.
But they're definitely contrasts, you know, where P Model is like trying on something new every album. Like, I feel like Pygmy Lush has a progression that's very like they stumble onto their sound and then they're just like, that's it. We're just going to pinpoint onto that sound and just fucking do it, you know?
Oh, yeah. So I guess it's my week to do the history of the musical artists we're talking about. So, Pygmy Lush is from the lovely D.C. suburb of Sterling, Virginia.
Home of Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, a place with a pretty decent, cultural output. And, James Buchanan, former U.S. president, apparently used to have a summer home there.
Back in the day. What a privilege to get to spend your summers with the Bukes.
Our only unmarried president.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, you really did do a lot of research.
I just know that about James Buchanan. I think
you just Andrew knows just so much about James
Buchanan.
I think
it's actually from Cat Dog, where they mentioned James Buchanan, our only bachelor president. I remember that being a line from any Nicktoon. I forget which Nicktoon, and Cat Dog is my best guess.
Nickelodeon was always a very educational channel, I feel like.
Yeah.
Second Nickelodeon cameo on our show.
Stay tuned for more.
So
Pygmy Lush formed in Sterling, Virginia, kind of out of the ashes of a couple of formative post-hardcore thrash bands, the most notable of which was Page 99, who's pretty good for that genre. I'm not a huge fan of hardcore metal type stuff, although DC is kind of the epicenter for that culturally, and Page 99 is pretty good. And as well as City of Caterpillar, another one who's, I guess, less famous, but still existed and put out albums. But out of the ashes of those bands formed Pygmy Lush, in about 2004.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so being the person who's introducing this band to our coterie, I think that's the word I'm looking for. I forget. My French is
Is how we
terrible.
refer to each other in the third person.
So my history with this band is I think maybe about 7 years ago or so, my cousin Danielle just on Facebook posted a really good video, which I will put in the show notes, of Pygmy Lush. It's like this black and white, very well filmed, like the sound quality is really good. This sort of video of them playing a couple of songs off of the split LP, which we'll discuss live. And it was just such a really interesting sound to me that I, from there, just kind of dove in. And it's not a long discography to dive into. So I immediately kind of fell in love with the sound, and they are, yeah, one of my favorite bands. And they're this kind of odd, I mean, they've kind of metamorphosed into a very specific sound over the course of their career. But at the beginning, they were kind of tennis balling back and forth between like hardcore thrash punk and acoustic folk, and now they're kind of purely acoustic folk.
Which the ping-ponging really surprised me. I remember when you brought them up, you're like, "Oh, they're a hardcore band that turned into a folk band." I was thinking of something like the Knot Twist, which started off as like a weird metal band and then over time became this, sweet electro pop thing. But they're like, it's not that they started as one and became the other. They're just like both and figured out that one worked better for them, which was like, I don't know. It's kind of a cool thing to look at because, especially, and we'll get to it when we talk about that album. Especially just hearing like, and the split EP, like the contrast between their two styles, and them like being like, well, we can do this one thing, but the other thing I feel like we do a lot better and like is a lot more unique. So I don't know. It's kind of cool. It seems like it's like a bit like PML. It feels like you are witnessing experimentation in real time.
Which I felt similarly about P Model, where it's like you're kind of going through this career and seeing all of their varied interests kind of making themselves obvious through the music they're playing. Yeah, so they're a band that I've really enjoyed for a long time, and they were my contribution to this endeavor, this 2 week endeavor of ours. And so it's three studio albums, one split LP, and we're only
EP. Oh, LP?
oh yeah,
Oh,
and
oof.
we're only looking at
Okay.
the Pygmy Lush half of that LP. But so they,
Which is an EP?
yeah, they come just under the wire with four things to consider.
Which is okay. I feel like as time goes on, we can get looser. As long as there's a good conversation there, I don't know how slavish we have to be about our standards.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
And it's not unheard of. We did The Backyard and we did Miracle Legion. So that's an EP. We're good.
It's
We're
fine.
good. You know what? Take it up with our boss, which is us. So fuck you.
Yeah, hold your tweets. Just hold them. Hold on to
I know they're burning inside you, but we've got shit to talk about. And yeah, like I don't know if I've been super clear about that, but I did really, really enjoy this band. Like this is definitely, I don't get to hear, as I said last time, I feel like I don't dive headlong into new bands as often as I used to. This is maybe the first time I've gone into like a whole brand new discography of a band I'd never heard of, this year. And it was great. Like, I think this is like a band that is definitely going to stay on rotation for a while.
Yeah, and that honestly was the best part of I'm sure we'll talk about this more at the end, which was P Model is a band that is not gonna leave my music library anytime soon. I'm excited to listen to them more. So this worked out really well in terms of introducing each
Yeah.
other to bands.
It felt good. Feels good.
It's good. It's really it's good, and we're totally out in the in the woods, I guess, right now. Talking
Right.
about bands that we are interested in. But if you're a listener of the podcast, and we hope that you're a listener and a subscriber and a rater of our podcast,
Yes,
listen to
please
both
bring
these
that up.
bands. So Pig Malush's musical output starts in 2007 after a few years of being together with an album called Bitter River.
Yeah, so that's surprising when you said they started in 2004. Had they released anything up to that point, or was that just they were just together for 3 years and then did it?
That was it. They strike me as the type that I think, they seem like folks who have like day jobs and do their thing, and kind of like music is kind of a side activity for them. So like they kind of take their time. Although there's only 1 year between the first two albums.
Right.
But yeah, they had their original bands, and both of whom have had reunions since then. I guess apparently City of Caterpillar, who I've never listened to, is having a reunion tour this fall. So who knows what that means for Pygmy Lush?
Well, we might get into what that means for Pygmy Lush. You had done some sleuthing for that, right?
Yeah, I've done the very deep dig of looking at their Facebook page.
Listen, just go into it.
Yeah, so
just
yeah, we start with 2007's Bitter River.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, I like last week where, I would kind of give my impressions first. I want Max. What were your impressions of this album?
Right. So again, we usually go chronological with this, and as I do now. That's dumbest way of saying that.
Yep, there you go.
Started with Bitter River and was immediately kind of shocked, right? Because again, or not immediately, Nonsensical Tremor was what I was expecting. It was like, oh, they start off hardcore, this is pretty hardcore. It's not great hardcore.
No.
It's not like obviously, I think I probably like the genre more than you do, but I'm not an acolyte either. And here, it feels like a lot of the songs here that are on that mode can't tell if they want to be like thrash or screamo, if they want to be like Daughters or Glassjaw. Like it feels like they're kind of all over the place there, and it seems vestigial already.
It does. Here. And the folk stuff kind of feels like this very sort of back porch campfire songs, kind of like
it's very. But with like that, like it's trying to be kind of spooky about it, like it's very Deliverance-y, to me, which I think sometimes works and sometimes doesn't.
Absolutely.
But I do think like this is evidence, like they do this and they'll keep the sort of guitars around for a little bit, or they'll bring them back every so often. But here it is obvious that like with the folk songs, while we'll get into eventually, this wasn't my favorite album by any means. The folk stuff seems like it has more. It's more unique and it's more interesting.
Yeah,
and you can hear them kind of discovering things.
Yeah, and they have three guitars, which I feel like is kind of part of why this sound is what it is. Where it's the sort of sum of its parts, where no one is playing anything particularly complex or crazy, but layering those three guitar sounds over each other sort of makes the sound full and. Like, I don't know, consistent in a really nice way.
Well, it makes it very kind of like, it's like a gorgeous, well, not so much here, but eventually becomes this like kind of gorgeous wall of sound in a way that shoegaze often does, but like without all the distortion. And I do feel like, cause yeah, a lot of their folk songs, even, when they start making better albums than this, are still like two or three chords that just kind of go.
Yeah.
It feels a bit like, oh, this is a weird comparison, but maybe like Galaxy 500 or something, where they're just kind of like this, it's a lazy strum, or like with some complicated guitar parts in it, and the songs don't develop that much, but they're so single-minded in that pursuit that they just win you over.
Yeah, and and the thing I appreciate too is that there are a couple of songs they try multiple times on this album.
Yeah, which I think is, I mean, I don't think Send Bombs is the song that most deserve that treatment, but I do think it's kind of cool to watch it happen.
Yeah, and I like that Heard Everything, the first iteration is this very kind of slow acoustic song, then the second version is like this weird Tom Waits B-side. Every bomb, nine soul cars, sweet tough dog. Tree. With saxophones and
the first version, I think works better. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
This came out with Martin Mulcahy. It may come up even more in the future, but like, really, Tom Waits is the one that should be doing Tom Waits.
Yeah,
it's I will say
influenced by Tom Waits, who I've been appreciative was influenced by Tom Waits.
No, there is like his voice is really good, which I wasn't expecting. Like, it kind of. In the screamo bits, it sounds a lot like the guy from Braid, but on the acoustic bits, it's got this sort of high, lonesome sound with just kind of enough grit.
Yeah, Chris Taylor, by the way. Yeah, the way it's
Chris like. Taylor, thank you. I tried to do research on these guys, and I couldn't find a whole lot.
They're not.
You know, P-Model had a full Wikipedia page, and these guys have like a lot of red links and a paragraph about how they exist.
The red links.
Yeah. Pygmy Lush and their red links.
But yeah, this album, it sort of whipsaws back and forth between the sort of, thankfully, short hardcore songs.
All the songs are short, which is something I did really appreciate. Like,
yeah, when they go long, it's with purpose, especially on the next the
right.
future releases.
The strongest songs are the ones they usually let go long, and then, like, with a few exceptions. And here, like, very few of the songs were super memorable to me, but none of them overstayed their welcome, and the mood was kind of interesting enough. I like Slave to a Teenager. I think that's the only good thrash song here.
That's my favorite one too, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds a little like Filter.
It does. is,
but I'm into that. I like Filter. Mm-hmm. Big Black River, I think, is a great song.
Yeah.
It actually has a hook and kind of a good pace. I feel like I like Red Room better because of what they do to it later on. I don't know if it's actually great here, but knowing that it's after
it comes
when
back.
I came back to listen to it today after having heard the new version of it, I was like, oh, okay, I can kind of hear the depths in this song that end up getting explored.
Yeah. But I think it's a solid debut. It's not my favorite by any means.
Was this the one you started with? What'd you start with?
I started with Mad Hope.
Okay, that makes more sense.
And kind of worked in both directions from that. But I think, Better River's good. Like, the songs that I like, I really like. I think Throw the Jockey's a great closer.
It's a good closer.
It's a weird little song.
It is weird. And this band, like, is usually very epic or, like, very, like, lengthy with their closers.
Mm-hmm.
And almost always a good way. And, yeah, Throw the Jockey. When this album was over, I was kind of surprised it was over.
Yeah, whereas,
you know, even though there's like 16 songs, but they're all pretty short, and Throw the Jockey seems like so, I'd say anticlimactic, but the album isn't trying to build to anything, it just kind of is.
Yeah, it just kind of exists. I mean, 2008's Mount Hope is a much more kind of album-oriented thing.
It's super album-y. Yeah, Mount Hope. I really love this album.
It's real good.
This album like turned me around like immediately. Like at first I was like, okay, this is kind of cool and interesting. Like, I could see this band being, you know, worth, you know, an exploration. Like, I wonder what's going to happen from here. I didn't expect, because you said folky, mm-hmm. I didn't expect Mount Hope to be this, like, glacial, like, gorgeous, reverby kind of cathedral of sound sort of thing.
It does feel like it's been recorded in a cathedral. Like, it's this very, like, the reverb is just the right amount.
While still being a lot, but, like, not so much that you can't distinguish between the guitars, say.
Mm.
It's very dreamy. I compared it to Benoit Poulard, which, like, is a weird comparison.
But I got it. As soon as you said yeah. it, I got it.
I've only ever heard that one album, Précis.
Yeah.
I'm not saying any of this right. I'm bad at French. And he's, like, Canadian, so fuck it.
Yeah.
But he also had this very, like, dreamy, kind of washed-out reverb vibe to his songs. Although they were all kind of folky in a more kind of poppy way.
Mm-hmm.
this album is still kind of melancholic and dark and uses its reverb to accentuate its weirdness rather than to like blur it into something, you know, that's purely pretty.
Yeah, I mean, it starts really strong. Asphalt, I think, is...
Asphalt's great.
Incredible. And it just kind of sets the mood of, like... It does have a traditional song structure of, like, verse, chorus, bridge, verse, chorus. Like, it kind of does that, but you don't really realize that at any moment during the song.
No, you don't. Well, especially because the verses go on longer than a verse usually would. And it's kind of playing within that structure a bit more than, I think... just listing it out says.
Mm. Yeah.
No Feeling is even better, I think. I love No Feeling.
Yeah.
There's a thing this band does that, you know, is instantly going to endear me to them, which is that there are certain chord progressions I just really like in whatever context they're in. If you listen to that top 40 episode of Walnut Desk, it's why I love Passion Fruit by Drake, is because it's a chord progression I like. These guys are really good at nailing those chord progressions I'm really into. They do a lot of relative minors, which is, you know, like C to A minor, G to E minor, which is, you know, that's the Teenage Kicks chord progression, which I love in any context. They do it here in like really cool, sad, interesting ways. Like if it was just a chord progression I liked, it wouldn't be enough for me. But I feel like they do these chord progressions I already love and double down. Again, they double down on it so hard. No Feeling doesn't develop that much, but it does have this progression that it just really... luxuriates in.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't overstay its welcome. It's less than 3 minutes.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Red Room Blues, the longer version. There's this two way longer. Truly long song in this album.
There are, but they're both great, I think.
They're both really great.
Red Room Blues, like, the chords don't even come in for a couple minutes. It's very, like, ambient. It's got kind of a Brian Eno Thursday afternoon vibe to it, where it just sort of hangs there. And it's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And it doesn't go away when the song starts. Like, it keeps, like, this vibe going, even though this, like, song that was very kind of lo-fi and spare before, like, comes in under this lush bed. I really like the Red Room Blues version on here.
Yeah, it's the better version. And then the other long song is the closer, which is Tumor.
Which also, like, I gave two songs my 4-heart rating this time, and Tumor was one of them. Tumor actually made me cry, like, the first time I heard it.
It's a really just incredibly beautiful song.
It is, and it's one of these... So there's this thing that you do where it's, like, they were about, like, how they double down and, like, push things to the breaking point, where there are songs that, like, you know, the first minute or two are like, oh, no, oh, this is pretty, this is cool, this is all right, but they keep going, and they keep going not in a way that, like, is exhausting, but is a way that, like, you're breaking down my resistances, you know? So, like, Tumor starts off sad, but over, like, 7 minutes, by the time you get to the end, you're just, like, a wreck.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just broken through to you, or something like Frozen Man, which starts off like it feels sort of generic, but they push it so hard that like you like start like soaking in the complexities of it, and it just like starts affecting you.
setting is kind of this album all over, is this sort of where you're at after a minute of a song is not where you're at after 3 minutes of a song.
Exactly, which is, I think, a quality of music that isn't explored that often. Like, maybe Brian Eno does it, because that's what ambient's all about, but, like, they do it super well here. I was really shocked. I don't know. Anyways, that's all my impression. So you started with this. How was that?
Yeah, that was great. It was, I started with this even though the songs that I heard in that video were on our next release that we talked about. But, yeah, I think from Asphalt On, which I did see Pygmy Lush live once, maybe 6 years ago now, on the
Retro Concert Report.
Very belated. On what was probably the rainiest day in New York City that I've spent not hunkered down inside. Like, I had to walk to the concert venue, which was somewhere in Bushwick. I don't think it was St. Vitus, although that's the name that springs to mind. I doubt that that's what it was. I don't even know if it's like Vitus is in Bushwick. But I saw them play, and one of the opening acts was this band, Des Arc, who's really great, and the lead singer of whom does some backup vocals on Old Friends, which we'll discuss shortly. But they opened with Asphalt, and it was a really amazing show. And it was like after a couple metal bands for these dudes to just sort of go up on stage and play these really intricate folk songs was kind of incredible.
Yeah, I would love to see that live. They are the kind of band that I feel like would just like envelop you live.
Yeah, they were
for sure.
They were fantastic.
What are their beards like? I feel like they are straddling two genres that are beard heavy.
They're more like scraggy. At least Taylor, the lead singer, was the couple of the guy. It was there. I think two clean shaven, two very lumberjacky, and then one kind of in the middle. I believe that's if I'm recalling correctly.
So it's the best of all possible worlds. It's the whole beard rainbow.
Yeah, they were sitting squarely on the beard fence.
That's a bad fence to sit on.
Sitting on the beard fence.
That is an itchy, itchy fence.
Ugh.
You had mentioned this when we were talking before. I don't like the up-tempo songs on here. The sort of like
porch stompy, like,
yeah, they're very porch stompy, and they feel a little like cartoonish and obnoxious to me. Concrete Mountain and Butch's Dream especially like don't work for me.
Concrete Mountain is the one track I don't want on here, but the title track I think is great. Also, it's like a minute and a half, so it's in
the title track. I'm fine with. I can deal with that. Dreams, no, not Dreams are class. I love Concrete Mountain and Butch's Dream are longer than a minute.
Butch's Dream is kind of a weird, like, I don't know if it works in the context of the album, especially because Tumor comes right afterwards, which kind of erases your memory of it. But
Tumor is such a natural progression from Dreams Are Class. Like, it's a weird thing to just like throw this little.
I think it's sequenced pretty well overall.
I do too, and it carries a mood really well. It feels like, you know, this is somebody's breakup album, I'm sure, and it probably works great for it.
Oh yeah.
But there's just these three songs that they come on, I'm like, you're just tearing me out of it. I don't care for you.
Yeah.
And what you're doing to me.
And then
they're not enough to like ruin the album by any stretch of the imagination. Like, they're even the longer ones are short enough. I don't care, but
yeah. The good songs being enough to keep your energy up is
absolutely
exemplified by the split LP with a band called Turbo Slut, who I've never heard, but apparently you said is
they're okay.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, not my favorite of the genre, but I was a big fan of them, you know, early on. They don't sound that much like Des Arc, but I think they run in the same circles.
That's cool.
They have some good stuff.
Yeah.
But
and there's some good stuff here too. I think
there is
three of maybe my favorite Pygmy Lush songs were all in this selection here.
I actually like this split a lot. Even the when they bring the distortion guitar back, outside of like Rut Gluttony, which is again pure thrash, and thrash is not something I think they're super great at,
but again, it's literally less than 45 seconds.
Yeah, so it's fine. But something like Affluence at the Altar is actually like pretty good.
I like it a lot.
It's good. Bright Oblivion is pretty good. Like, it's still like kind of generic as screamo goes, but it's good generic screamo.
Yeah.
Like, I'm into those. But then there's also your favorite song, which I think is my favorite song.
My favorite song, yeah, Proud King of the Doomed, I think is an absolute fucking masterpiece.
It's really great. It's so simple and breezy, but it just works really well.
Yeah, there's like these sort of, I don't know, the structure of it's interesting. Like, there's this sort of driving guitar part, but then there's these sort of like
driving
atmospheric little guitar lines going through it. Like, it's all kind of, it feels like it's kind of floating in this weird way. And also, it's some of my favorite lyrics of theirs. It's the opening line is "Wind blows through our good intentions," which is kind of, I think, a great line.
That is a great line. And I mean, once you mentioned like you were picking up lyrics, I was like, oh, there are some actually good lyrics in here. I wasn't paying attention before.
Yeah, they don't, I mean, they do kind of the REM, early REM thing where they mix them way down in the mix. So like they're not.
And there's a lot of reverb. It's I early on in Mount Hope was thinking of like thought of My Morning Jacket with them, which is a singer with a similar voice who also uses like a lot of reverb. I think Pygmy Lush is a lot better.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But they do have the same thing where the lyrics are very hard to distinguish often. But they are wordy, and what you do pick up, I think, is good.
Mm.
Proud King of the Damned is, like embodies this sort of wistful melancholy so well. It's, like, it just is, like, it feels like a concentrated feeling.
Yeah, it's like a whimsical apocalypse or something. This is, like,
yeah, exactly.
Burning buildings, like, and someone being crowned with molten gold and all these things lyrically happening. Well, but it has this sort of... jaunty is not the right word, but, like, the music is kind of... I don't know, it's not slow. It's not a good day to hide or remember song slow.
Right, it's God, did you listen to the last Walnut Desk about the conspiracy theories? There is a bit where Ryan's dad accused them of being Nero dancing on the ashes.
Yeah.
And I feel like this feels a bit like that, or a bit of like of, you know, like a folk singer wandering the wastelands, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a very like, ah, well, approach to like terrible things happening.
Just a sick hum under the floorboards of something rotten being born.
Right, but it feels like kind of a shrug to all that.
Yeah, it's like, that's what happens. What are we gonna do?
Yeah, them's the breaks.
We're all doomed.
And it's great. And you know, the other slow songs on here are really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's A Good Day to Die is the most Mount Hopey thing,
mm-hmm.
with all the reverb. It's got some good chords. The guitars are gorgeous, especially at the end.
Yeah.
And I really like November Song quite a bit.
November Song is really good. It's very sort of glacial, and you compared it to like something slowed all the way down.
Yeah, like a talk show host, like the Radiohead song.
Yeah.
But like super narcotic and dreamy, like slowed way, way down. This cool thing where, again, it starts off with these Brian Eno atmospherics and the musical parts kind of kick in piecemeal, in a way that makes it seem like the song is like congealing out of the air. I really like it. I was not expecting, even after Mount Hope, but once I heard like White Oblivion, I'm like, oh, is this gonna be like, you know, Bitter River why, but it, no, I think like this is really solid. Split EPs and LPs usually aren't.
No, and even something like Affluence at the Altar, I kind of felt like there was some aspect of the folksy stuff that was kind of bleeding into the thrash stuff, where it's a little more.
Yeah, it's got a chorus.
Yeah, more musically kind of interesting.
I don't know. Like, I really dug this. Again, like after Bitter River, it's never bad. There are things I think less of, but all the music I heard after Bitter River, I'm just like, no, I'm cool with this at the very least.
Yeah.
To a point.
Yeah.
Are we ready to move on?
Yeah, which will include.
It's also worth noting, like, I should have known this was a split LP because, like, these are seven songs that get very long. This is a good, like, 25 minutes long.
Yeah.
From a split. Like, that's pretty cool.
There are full albums by single bands that are less long than this, so.
Right. And this was 2009, so our first three albums all came out 1 year after the other.
Which is kind of impressive. Yeah, it's.
It is very impressive.
And then, yeah, in 2011, to this date, the most recent release by Pygmy Lush is the album Old Friends.
Right. If we're starting with my impression, I'm very conflicted about this album.
Oh, yeah. Well, you had some reservations about the production sound on it.
The production bothers me quite a bit, like more than production usually does, which is that it's very, like, polished and clean. In a way that I don't think suits these guys very well. I think they need a bit of blur. I think they need, because what ends up happening is a lot of these songs sound really generic, you know? Something like Good Dirt is literally an Iron and Wine song.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. NOL ends up being very dull. Yellow Hall feels like very kind of generic, dramatic rock. To me. The album eventually wins me over, much like, you know, a song from Mount Hope would, but I feel like the production really does it no favors here.
Yeah. I think the back half is really strong on this too.
It is.
I love Admit
for sure.
Quite a bit.
Admit's good.
January song.
January's very good.
Pals.
I like Pals again is like a great closer. They're really good at closers. I like A Weird Glow a lot, even though it's way shorter than it should be, I feel like.
Yeah, I want to live in that song a little bit longer than it is.
It feels like it's just getting going when it stops.
Yeah.
And I like the song. I mean, it's a song that, you know, could, well, Weird Glow maybe not so much, but something like I'll Wait With You could very much be in a Zach Braff movie. Stay tuned for for Zach Braff. Why am I saying
that? Yeah, we'll just do an entire episode on the Garden State soundtrack.
Oh God, I hate that movie so much. Night at the Johnstown Flood brings back some of that reverb that I love so much. But it's still too clean. It ends up sounding a lot, and this isn't a bad thing, but it sounds a lot like Fathering, that old Mark Mulcahy solo album.
Yeah.
We covered. It's almost jaunty.
Yeah, in a way.
What did you, because you came to this album later, like, what do you think of Old Friends?
I love this album. This is my favorite album of 2011.
Oh, wow. Okay. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, I think it, I mean, the production, I just think it's kind of something different. I think their first two albums have moved through such different sounds that I was fine with the production being a little more refined on this one. with Bitter River kind of doing the back and forth between hardcore and folk, and then Mount Hope being this kind of very atmospheric folk record. Old Friends, I think, I really like it. I think if I was going to, I think if I was going to try to show this album, show this band to someone who had never heard it before, just sort of in my everyday life, this might be the album I gave to them to show them, like, to try to pull someone along on this journey. Mm-hmm. Even though I don't think it's maybe the most exemplary of what their sound is and can do. But I think it does kind of, the drive behind these songs, I think, is what kind of gets me. Like, it's the sort of, there's something about driving folk with, like, a good backbone and with sort of lots happening melodically that really gets to me, and I think this album does that very exceptionally well. And I think it's sequenced kind of beautifully. Like, I think it kind of moves between, like, the, like, paces and arrangements really well. I love the backing vocals by I Will Look Her Name Up, because this arc, again, has come up a couple times and is great. Aimé Argote. Her backing vocals are really great on the songs where she shows up. Sat upon a couch and turned off till we begin to enjoy. I think it's incredibly lush, for lack of a better word. And while I was initially very hesitant about the production quality, considering how much I enjoyed what had come before, I've come around to really enjoying it. And I do think they're more of a band that works well in a reverb-y kind of, where they sound like they're in just a large empty room. Mm-hmm. I also really love how they sound here.
I mean, it's worth saying that, like, the production on the split is pretty clean. Mm. Like, it is pretty well produced.
Yeah.
Old Friends is weird to me. When I first approached it, it was a major disappointment for me, like a huge disappointment. I was like, oh, this sounds really kind of boring and generic. Revisiting it, a lot of it held up better than I thought. Mm. And again, it is like a sound that eventually wins me over, which I think is part of why the back half feels a lot better to me.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, it's hard to put a finger on. It's not like even like I have a thing against like more generic production of like good pop songs or anything, like, or I think it's just that it felt, early on especially, it felt like a lot of the character had been scrubbed off of this band. Like this, for, you know, the first, you know, 4 or 5 songs, I feel like could have been another band or any band. And that was, like, if I had started with this album, I don't think that would have bothered me at all. I think part of it is, like, after kind of falling in love with this band and then hearing that.
Mm.
It bothered me. I don't know. It's got a terrible cover too, and usually they're, you know, well, I say usually their first two albums have great covers. I don't dislike it because of its cover, but I think it's worth mentioning.
I think Mount Hope has the best cover of all these.
It does. But Bitter River is a good cover.
It is.
Especially for the kind of album it is. I don't know. Old Friends seems like an album that I need more time with, maybe.
Yeah.
Because again, like, one of the funny things about a band you know nothing about is you have no reason to, like, any album over another album be like, oh, okay, maybe I should spend more time with this. Maybe there's something here I'm not getting, because they're all the same to you. Yeah. As far as that goes. So it's like, I heard Old Friends and was kind of turned off by it and just assumed it was a turn-off album that doesn't have anything. But if you like it as much as you do, maybe it is worth kind of sticking with.
Yeah. I like it quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's their output so far. I like he briefly mentioned earlier, in my looking at their Facebook page, apparently they either recorded or are recording their next album. So and we of course here on the island we keep an eye on bands that we've done before, and we will eventually, once there's enough albums to fit the bill, we will sort of do a catch-up episode on new releases of bands we've already talked about. So they're on the
Yeah, if you're waiting for goths, if you want to hear us talk about goths, then write letters to, Kendrick and Mark Mulcahy and tell them to come out with albums real
And
quick.
Pingula, yeah, tell them to put out what they've already recorded if they've
Yeah,
recorded.
exactly.
Yeah, so get them on it.
Maybe resurrect Prince and be like, hey.
Yeah, maybe there's some really good shit in his vault, his storied vault.
Oh God, that made me sad. I'm sorry, I made that joke. I miss you, Prince.
It's fine.
Okay,
Yeah, so
back.
as we are wont to do, after discussing our musical artist, we have some categories in which we have to slot
We
albums.
can't just enjoy a discography. We have to categorize shit.
Yeah.
We have to say, quantify the amount of enjoyment and the kinds of enjoyment here.
Absolutely.
And I guess if we're doing the same as last time, I'll go first
Yeah.
all the time.
So we start
Every
with
time.
most disappointing.
Most disappointing. I went way back and forth on this. I still think Bitter River is their worst album. I think Old Friends is going to be my most disappointing just because it was the album where I actually felt a feeling of disappointment when I first heard it. Like, again, it did win me over, and maybe I'll develop a better relationship with it eventually, also much like my breasts. They hurt all the time.
I can only imagine.
There is room for growth there, but the worst metaphor. I'm so sorry.
It works.
But the and this is so this is such a hipster thing, but like hearing how clean and like how kind of generic sounding, Yellow Hall, Chance and Good Dirt were, it was just like, oh, I miss that weird, like, mystical different sound. Like, it was a disappointing sound. And even when I will say this, even when the album brought me back, it was in a very different way from how this band had affected me before. It was in more of kind of a Pete Yorn, like, I can appreciate this sort of clean, gorgeous sound, but it's not like breaking my heart the way the other albums did. Although Pals is incredible. It's a very good closer. A lot of it kind of felt like sort of towards the end, like kind of Smashing Pumpkins, like later work, like the more shimmery stuff from them, which I'm super into, but like here it has not had a chance to reach me, and so it felt like a huge come down. Like I was very excited about this band, and then I got an album that was good, but not exciting in the same way. So it's that kind of disappointment. I don't think it's a bad album by any means. I think it's at least half good, maybe all the way good. Well, I'll find out. What was your most disappointing?
I went with Bitter River, just mostly because I had to pick one, and partly because I think it is such a weird whiplash between folk and thrash that it just kind of feels like an assortment of songs. As much as I,
Which is anathema here on the island.
yeah, as much as I love a lot of the songs on here, some of my favorites of theirs, period, like
Really?
Throw the Jockey and the Big Black River, I think are great and kind of do what they
Yeah.
do best in really small packages that work for me. But yeah, overall, I had to make it most disappointing. That was it.
It doesn't really have a mood the same way the other albums do,
No,
I
the ones are
think.
very, thematically sort of, they know what they want to do and they do it.
Yeah. I feel like if Bitter River were just the folkier songs, I'd like it better.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a bit. It would fit better together. Like, I think it's cool that they're doing like thrash and folk together. Just like, fuck it, we'll do whatever we want, back and forth.
Yeah,
that's a cool idea. I feel like on album, especially based on like the cover and how there are more folk albums or folk songs and thrash songs, I feel like they wanted to make that album and didn't.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Absolutely.
Most surprising, I'm gonna go with the split.
Mm-hmm.
One, because I was not. Split EPs and LPs are almost never good.
They're a rare beast. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a one-off fun project with your friend. Like, it's never good. Although the only Bright Eyes song I've ever loved was from a Split EP. That'll be a good, if anybody wants to torture me, make me do a Bright Eyes episode.
Oh god.
But where's the baby Father John Misty? Ooh. You know, the progenitor to
baby John so many, Misty.
Baby John Misty. I'm anchoring so many of my dear emo friends. I just hate Bright Eyes. I was expecting this to be kind of a weird, especially when you suggested it. I was shocked. Like, okay, we're doing a split. Like, is there going to be anything here we're talking about? But there was plenty. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know, like we said, Proud King of the Doom's an amazing song. Affluence at the Altar is maybe their only really truly good like thrash song, or screamo song. Like, there it has like. You know, November Song, which was, you know, what I liked about November Song is it was like moody and slow in a way they hadn't done before. Like, it felt a bit more unsettling in its moody slowness. Like, it felt like, you know, it had that Radiohead vibe of like, we are trying to unnerve you with sort of the slow beauty of this song.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it really bowled me over. Like, I listened to it, I was like, oh, this is all even like, there aren't really bad songs on here. Like Rut Gluttony and Black Liver Blues aren't great, but they're both less than a minute. One's less than half a minute.
Mm.
Like, who cares?
It's fine.
The songs that are great, they stick with, and I like them a lot. Like, again, like after we're like, eventually I reached Old Friends and felt kind of down. After Mount Hope, I heard this. And I was like, oh yeah, God, this band's amazing.
You keep going.
I fell in love with this band, and now I'm still super in love with this band. This is great.
Yeah.
What about you?
My most surprising was Old Friends. It's been a while since I visited it, and to still enjoy so many of these songs so much. I think it's less atmospherically consistent as, the album that I will pick. Not that there's any left to choose from. But
not the album I'll pick.
Yeah.
Surprise. No.
But I think like the sound is interesting. It's different production wise, obviously, which we've talked about. But I'm in a way that I'm still excited to see what they do next and what they keep doing. Like, if their next album is a mix of thrash and folk, like Bitter River is, I'd be interested to hear it based on mm-hmm. where this album puts them as of, I guess, 6 years ago now. So.
Oh yeah, I
come on, guys.
Should say, like, I was a little bit down on this album. If they ever put out something else, I'm getting it like day one. I'd be very excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, just come out with your next album, guys. Just, you know, keep going.
Hey, Pygmy Lush, I know you're listening to me. I don't know your names, but I want to hear you. I want to hear you sing again.
I know you gentlemen can hear us, so please just put out the next record. Yeah, so I guess
you want a 3-2-1 our pick?
I mean, well, yeah. I mean, we're probably gonna pick the same thing here. Now that we're at this point,
I could keep making a Bitter River joke, but I already said I thought it was their worst.
Yeah.
3-2-1 Mount Hope.
Mount Hope, y'all.
Yeah, I can still go first on why I love it, but like, this is just There are a lot of musicians who have tried this sort of album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we mentioned My Morning Jacket and Benoit Poulard, but also something like Phosphorus or even like Will Oldham's Dreamier Moments. A lot of people have tried to make albums like this, and I've always liked the aesthetic of it. I feel like this album is the first one that's really captured me as an album in that aesthetic. Like, it, the first time I listened to it, I was emotionally attached to these songs, which is hard. Like, I can, you know, the only other album I can think of off the top of my head that did that would be like Souvlaki, right? Mm. Like, the great albums, like, emotionally endear you to them the first listen, or a specific kind of great album, and it, this is one of them. And like, I already kind of knew my opinion on this album, and I kept listening to it again and again anyways. Like, it kind of helped me get through the week. Mm. Even with the songs I don't like on it, like, they're so slight that it doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's such an atmosphere. Like, it's such a consistent atmosphere that, and it's a sound. Great atmosphere.
I love too. Like, this is an atmosphere that's like kind of a laser guided missile to my heart. Or what does Dennis Hopper say? What is a love letter? It's a bullet. Is it a bullet straight to my heart?
Something like that.
It's a bullet straight to my heart, but it's also a missile, and it's also a letter, and it's an album. It's four things in one. I really liked it. I don't know. Like, and it even had like this sort of wonderful high of listening to an album for the first time that's amazing from a band you didn't expect anything from. It was great. I really, everybody should own this album. Go buy it. Go to Amazon.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's my spiel on it, but
I'll send you a love letter straight from my heart, fucker. It's a bullet from a fucking gun, fucker. You receive a love letter from me, you're fucked forever.
We tried to be a family show, so I tried to keep the mini fuckers of Dennis.
Yeah, the blue velvet quotes to a minimum.
Yeah. Hey kids, you want to see boobs? Hey. You want to be scarred for life?
Hey kids, Pabst Blue Ribbon. Fuck that Heineken shit. Yeah, I mean, I'll echo what you said about Mount Hope. I think it's just such a impressive feat of atmosphere and like sound, and it just, yeah, like it's calming but also kind of affirming to any emotion that you're feeling. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like that's a lot of the music I love is stuff where if you're in a great mood, it feels like the soundtrack to your triumph, and if you're in a terrible mood, it is the soundtrack to your defeat. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is an album that can do both, like get you an album that can do both.
Right.
Where, yeah, it is, it's got this hope, but it's also so willing to just sort of take time within a song and just kind of explore the space of that song. Mm-hmm. Especially on like Red Room Blues or Tumor, like it just is so willing to kind of take its foot off the gas and kind of, you know, just live in that space.
Living it in a way that like is almost purposeful. Like there are some bands that will just like go on and on, you know. You could say Fish lives in their songs. Oof. But who wants to go over to Fish's house? Nobody. I do want to go over to Pygmy Lush's house.
Yeah.
And live in that for a while. They really, they're so restrained for a band with three guitarists. They're so restrained,
and just kind of coming from like this post-hardcore like loud
right
background.
No, absolutely. And they just, but they're like, we don't need more than these two chords and these three repetitive figures. Like, if we do what we're about to do with them, it's going to get you anyway. Mm. And it's going to get you better than it did if we, like, you know, if Tumor had a chorus, it wouldn't work.
Mm.
man. Yeah. I want to listen to it again right now.
Dead Zone. It's just the bells when they come in.
I know. Oh, God.
That's the thing. Like, it's a sound that kind of positions the stakes in such a way where, like, bells coming in is such a beautiful sound. You know, like, yeah, like that's huge.
For sure. Yeah, because it is like you get really absorbed. It like kind of breaks down your walls, and so everything you're super sensitive to. I can't think of any people offhand that pull it off that well. I can't think of anybody, Benoit Poulard included, who pulls off this sound, this heavily reverb cathedrally sound. You know, melodic without changing very much, you know, lived in without sounding too familiar. This sound, I feel like, is something these guys did so fucking well here. And it's not something I can get anywhere else, really. I loved it. I don't know. I thought this was great. I really enjoyed this whole week in a sad way.
Yeah.
I'm really glad I know about these people now. I don't think even like when the concept of them sounded fascinating, I was expecting to love what I loved as much as I did. And that's a great feeling. I don't know.
Yeah. It just works. It's a sound that works. They're a band that I think should be bigger.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I'm kind of shocked they aren't.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah, they do what they do so well and so consistently, and I'm excited to see what they do next and what they keep doing. You know, they seem like they kind of take their time, do things right, and yeah, I love them dearly. Thank you again to my cousin Danielle for turning me on to this band.
Oh, Danielles are such great people.
Yep.
In general, I've never known a bad Danielle. But I have to go do something real quick, and then we can come back and do admin.
Mm.
1 second, sorry.
Do it.
Okay. Anyways. I don't know, man. It's the fun thing about this whole conceit, to me, we were talking about this a bit earlier, is just like, there are a few feelings greater than, one, introducing a friend to music that they end up loving, and two, being introduced to music that you end up loving.
Mm.
There's this great feeling of both, like, kind of validation on one hand and, like, just, like, a sheer joyous surprise on the other. Especially, I think, also because there are so many bad experiences that happen when you try to do that.
Yeah.
You know, like, listening to your friend's band is like, oh, I don't like this. Yeah.
Oh no. Yeah.
Things like that. That when it happens and it works out as well as I think it did, you know, these past couple of weeks, like, it's a great feeling. I don't know. It feels good for us. I don't know how it feels for y'all, but this is our podcast, so.
Yeah, hey, we're
doing so right. Again, as we continue in our time of need to be the most antagonistic music podcast on the internet.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah. No, I'm just kidding. I love anybody who's listening to this, I love you dearly.
You're all the best.
Especially you, Mom. Yeah. You're great.
And speaking of people who listen to the podcast.
Yeah, so
what can those people do to help us out, Max?
My God. So they could do a lot of things. We haven't had a review or a rating in a while, and those are always huge helps.
Yeah.
But also one of the biggest things you can do right now is just listen to us and subscribe.
Come on over.
Yeah, so something that happened over last weekend as of recording this is all of our files got, like, borked, and we had to re-upload them to the feed, which means they've lost all of their stats. Like, whatever, like, their popularity bar that you'll see on iTunes is, like, blank for everything now.
Yeah, those sweet, sweet stats.
Those sweet stats that are really important for, like, say, you know, what iTunes does with your episodes and whether or not they show up when people search for these things, they're all gone. And we're going to have to build those up from scratch again. So, you know, if there is an episode you loved and would want to listen to again, listen to it again. Or just, you know, listen to us from now on, subscribe, and then again, absolutely ratings and reviews. Like, we, you know, it's something we ask for at the end of every episode because it always helps, and it's always nice to, like, I would love for more people to see us. I know people who like this show who would like us to be seen by more people. Although I know that there's a certain, like, barrier between that feeling and actually doing stuff, because I don't necessarily review every podcast I like either. Mm. But it's super important to us right now. Like, if we just, like, we were sort of climbing up certain metrics before, and we've just been shot back down again.
Yeah.
So as much as you could listen to us, subscribe, rate and review, like, any, or rate or review, even like even just a rating would help right now. All you have to do is click a couple buttons for that. That would be a huge help for Desert Island Discourse, especially
click on
just
us.
give us some clicks.
Give us your mouse clicks.
We could really use that, especially because we're about to get into some stuff that I think is really cool and people would enjoy listening to.
Mm-hmm.
Which is July to Buy Voices Month.
Yeah. That's what we're doing next. That's our next thing.
That's our next thing for the next... I would announce all the next three episodes, but they're all three Guided by Voices episodes. As part of this, like, kind of celebration of Guided by Voices, we are bringing on different guests. Mm-hmm. We're still working out some of them. Oh, excuse me. We're still digging... God, I'm burping so much.
Yeah, so we're not going to announce anything yet, because we're still, you know, figuring it out.
We're still figuring them out. We have, like, one guest nailed down, and then a couple that are sort of up in the air. But we're going to be doing Guided by Voices, which is a beloved summer band, I think a beloved band of both of us, and a band with a lot of albums and phases that I think are fascinating to discuss. So, mm-hmm. Our next episode is going to be the lo-fi era of Guided by Voices, which is from 1987's Devil Between My Toes all the way up to 1995's Alien Lanes.
Hell yeah.
After that, we're doing what is commonly referred to as the hi-fi era, which is 1996's Under the Bushes, Under the Stars, all the way up to 2004's Half Smiles of the Decomposed, and that will have Andy McAlpine on it.
Hey!
A fantastic poet and writer in his own right.
And fantastic human person.
Fantastic human, very big, very good at, like, kind of talking and discussing music, very enthusiastic music fan, and somebody who actually wanted to discuss the hi-fi era of Guided by Voices, which is weirdly rare. And our third episode is going to be from their post-reunion albums, which is 2012's Let's Go Eat the Factory, all the way up to 2017's, or 2016's, August by Cake.
Mm.
We're gonna have so much material for end of episode stingers from Guided by Voices. Their song titles are amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's it for that. Tentatively, we might be doing Aphex Twin after that, but we'll figure that out.
Yeah, we got some things to figure out.
Yeah, we got a month of just pure Dayton, Ohio rock and roll.
Hell. Yeah.
It's a journey. I hope it is a journey you will take with us and enjoy. But yeah, on top of rating, reviewing, describing, what else do we got? We got Twitter, right? At DI Disc Podcast. Yes.
Discs Podcast. Yeah.
Discs Podcast. We announce shows on there and also kind of share whatever anomalous cool things there are.
Yeah. Whatever we're into at the moment.
Yeah. There's our new website, desertislanddiscourse.com, which has a bunch of... We're working on adding content to it, but right now has a lot of quality of life improvements, so there are timestamp jumps if you want to, like, jump to us talking about a specific album, mm-hmm. or we're working on making it so that once you start playing a track on the page, it will hold your place if you decide to tab away. We're going to be a real website, boys and girls. So I think y'all are going to really like that once you start visiting us. We're great.
Come on by. Stop on by.
Hey, come on over to my house. It's called desertislanddiscourse.com. It's an island. No one's happy here. Anyways. But yeah, I think that's it for us today, right?
Yeah, that's all we got.
So then, until next time, I'm Max Cohen.
I'm Andrew Catherine.
I was trying to stall for you to find something, and it didn't.
And this has been the Pods of Swiftcast Reservoir.
All right.
I think that'll do it.
That works. That works for me.